Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks its guests three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine. And my guest this week, oh, I'm excited to have her back. She won our hearts and the third series of Big Brother 20 years ago. Going on to build a really impressive career as a presenter, DJ, and now a Sunday Times best-selling author. Emerging triumphant from the Big Brother house in 2002, she started working first as a DJ on Capital FM before moving on to Kerrang and most recently Virgin Radio, where she's only recently stepped back to spend more time with her family. In 2018, she became engaged to Martin, better known as Bodge or The Handsome. And a year later, they started a whole new huge life chapter as they questioned becoming parents, with Bodge keen, desperate even, to start a family, and her having always been upfront about the fact that she never wanted to be a mum, really questioning whether or not it was for her. It was a conversation they shared on their podcast, Maybe Baby, as they weighed up the pros and cons before ultimately taking the plunge and becoming parents to Noah, who's now 14 months old. She's charted her journey through it all with a book by the same name, Maybe Baby on the Mother Side, sharing with brutal honesty the fears, realities, highs and lows of becoming a parent. I can't wait to talk to her. Let's dial her up. It's Kate Lawler. How are ya?
Oh my goodness. I feel like I've just been on This Is Your Life with Michael Parkinson. You just basically told the whole story there.
I know. Well, not quite all of it, but there's a lot of it there, Kate. I mean, really remarkable. 20 years ago, there you were, bouncing off the walls in Elstree in a house in a car corner of a car park. And
oh, mate, 20 years ago, you just reminded me. It was, I can't actually believe it's been that long. That really makes me feel old. And makes me realise how young I was doing that show, but how I also felt, I felt like I was really old. Felt like I was really grown up and mature and had my head screwed on. I didn't have a clue.
Well, that's what being in your 20s is, isn't it? Feeling like you've got all the answers, but realising as you sort of nosedive into your 30s that actually you still haven't bothered to read the questions.
Yes. You've hit the nail on the head there. But I loved that I did Big Brother in my 20s. It was the kind of show that you needed to do at that age. Like, there was a reason that Sandy jumped over the wall and left the house, because he was much older than all of us and he just didn't fit in. I felt like I don't know if I fit. And then, I mean, there would be nothing wrong with somebody that age being in a house with loads of younger people, but I just felt like he wasn't his thing at that time. We were all so young and all we wanted to do was have fun, whereas he was at the age where he just wanted to sit back and drink a scotch. But yeah, I look back on that show with such fond memories, and I am Yeah, I think 20 years this year. We should do something to celebrate, really. I said to Alison about it.
Yeah, I mean, your year was vintage, right? Talking about wine. I mean, I know we should be talking about the baby and the book, and we're going to come to that because, you know, becoming a parent's been massive. But actually, all of this brings me into my first question. So let me just dive in, because it all sits around big decisions, right? Looking back over your life, one of your first big decisions was the decision to enter the Big Brother house. You had a job in IT. You were, you know, you had a sensible job in a sensible world, Kate.
Yeah.
And then you went into the Big Brother house with, like, Adele, Alison Hammond. You won the series. You won our hearts. Life changed forever. But it was a risk, right? It was three series in. You knew that it wasn't like, oh, we didn't know what was going to happen. You knew what you were doing. So I wondered, on the back of that big decision and the fruit that it's yielded, when else have you made a big, bold call in life and it's paid off big time?
It's interesting that you say that, because it was only yesterday that I was thinking about big decisions that I've made in my life, and so many of them, and I don't know if I'm the only person that has done this throughout their life, but so many of the big decisions I've made in my life that have, all of them have paid off in some way, shape or form, and did to a positive extent, but they've all been based around fear. And I feel like everyone at some point in their life makes a decision based around fear, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I don't know. But I genuinely did fear going into Big Brother, because the psychologist said to me, you've got a pretty stable life and I feel like you've got a good job and family and friends and I don't think there's anything missing in your life. And I was like, £70,000, mate, that's what's missing. So like, I would genuinely, like, I'd love that money so I can buy a flat like that. But that kind of, I was scared to say yes to going into Big Brother once they said to me, do you want to be a housemate? Because I thought, what if it all goes wrong? Like, he warned me that he was still treating previous housemates for psychological distress because of the abuse they've got after the show and how it didn't work out for them, or they thought that it would, you know, bring fruit, you know, stuff to their life that they never had before, and it didn't. So that was a kind of decision based on fear, but it worked out for me. But there was obviously, you know, there were highs and lows.
Yeah, that's interesting that they kind of put that in front of you, because I suppose they were learning as well. At first, winner was Craig, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He went on to have, you know, a really lovely time on telly building, and now continues to do bits and pieces, but it's fundamentally still doing what he did by trade building. Who won the second series? I can't remember.
Brian Dowling won the second series.
Of course.
Lovely Irish Brian Dowling, who had a great, like, career off the back of that. Do you remember he was on SMTV with Kat Deely? Like,
that's right.
He was mainstream telly. And I think he had a stint of hosting Big Brother as well.
He did. So when you look back at that, I suppose you were going in there thinking, well, they seem all right. They seem happy. But there must have been housemates that didn't.
No, of course. There were warnings from Brett, the psychologist. I remember he saw me twice. He advised me to watch the show on the VHS highlights show, videos that you used to get after the series had finished, because I hadn't actually watched the show before, but I knew about it because it was everywhere. I know, it's a long story. My twin sister was an addict and she was supposed to apply and then she didn't, so I just did. But he said, look, if you haven't watched it, you need to watch it. And when I watched the videos, I was like, this looks brilliant. I thought it looked like a right hoot and a great opportunity to win some money to put myself on the property ladder. But he said, you know, it can go wrong. Nasty Nick has received terrible abuse. He had to go into hiding. You know, that it was a front page, you know, national tabloid, like, disgrace. People really went for him. And, you know, he was talking about treating patients because of depression and anxiety they were getting after the show. So there were warnings, but I was confident in myself that I wouldn't come across like that. But you just never know. And so when I did get the call and they asked me to be a housemate, I thought, oh, just thinking about what Brett had told me, like, he's got to do his job. They have to warn you that, you know, if you don't win, you might be booted out first. It might ruin your life. But I just thought to myself, I have to take this opportunity, because if I'm watching the show knowing that I've been offered a place and I said no, I'd probably regret it for the rest of my life. So I'm glad I took that decision. But then after that, I think the next big decision I made was to move to Birmingham to start a job in radio. In 2007, I was DJing, and you probably know this as well as I do, but with DJing, the lifestyle that comes with it is pretty hedonistic and wild, and it can lead you down a road that can get you into a lot of trouble. I was you know, when you DJ in clubs, you're fueled with alcohol. The promoters will get you whatever you want, and then they'll take you to after parties, and you're still awake on a Sunday night thinking to yourself, what am I doing with my life? And so I was at a place where I was traveling the world, DJing, getting myself into terrible messes. In a way, I don't regret this, right? Because I had a really good time in my 20s, but it was a hedonistic, absolutely chaotic, wild ride. And I was in with the wrong crowd, but the right crowd. So I met a lot of people who were party animals. That's all they wanted to do because they were in their 20s, right? And I encourage anyone to party in their 20s, but to an extent now, like I would sit down with Noah and have these conversations with her when she's at the age where she wants to go raving, because it terrifies me to think that she might get into a mess like I got myself into. And I saw my friends hospitalized in comas because they'd overdosed. It was horrendous. So, and I thought to myself, I need to get out of this life. Like, where is this taking me? I'm on a one-way path to self-destruction. Like, I am caning it every weekend. I'm feeling depressed in the week. I'm sitting in bed eating cereal out of a box, downloading tunes for my next set. But it's not really the life that I imagine I'll want to live for the next 10 years. Like, I'm not going to be doing this in my 30s. Like, so I knew when I was offered a job in radio, but it was a move to Birmingham in a city where I didn't know anybody. It was like, what do I do? It's a really scary decision. I'm going to move away from my friends and my family, and I'm going to live in a city where I don't know anybody. But it's a chance to start a new career and quit the DJing and become more wholesome and get a career. Because, you know, after Big Brother, there was a huge rush of jobs and work, and then that kind of dried up by the next series, and then you're like, what am I going to do now? And I took it upon myself to learn to DJ and did that for a few years. But my family and friends were really pushing me to stay in London. They were like, don't go to Birmingham, we'll miss you. And I'm like, I had to do what I thought was best for myself, my mental health, my physical health, my career. And so I took that leap of faith and moved to Birmingham and started working in radio and dropped the DJ and became the wholesome version of myself that I knew was inside me all along. No, but I'm really glad I did.
You found your inner avocado.
Yeah, I did. I basically dined out on avocados for the next 4 years. Got a dog, you bought a house.
Yeah, exactly. But Kate, you know what? That is that's an extraordinary sort of chapter in your life.
Mm.
And to walk away from it, that shows real resilience because, like you say, you know, if there's a lot of partying going on, people very, very rarely want to leave the party because, you know, if you're getting yourself in all kinds of messes and pickles, there's always a reason to keep staying. There's always, oh, let's just one more night, or, you know, and it becomes normal not to go to bed.
Yeah.
And it becomes, you know, and that DJ lifestyle is...
It's tiring.
I mean, gosh.
Exhausting. The travelling, you know, you're going from one city to the next, maybe even one country to the next. And it's just, it's late nights. Your set's at 1 a.m. Your set's at 2 a.m. Yeah. You know, you're not...
Well, the more successful you are, the later you go on, you know. Yeah. I mean...
So true. I've done it. I have done a gig sober, but it's just not the same. Like, it's a strange experience when you are playing to 2,000 people who are all drunk, high, whatever, hands in the air, and you're like... It's hard to get on that vibe. Like, you need at least a white wine or a vodka soda light. Do you know what I mean? You need one drink to just loosen up. But also it's the timing and the travel and just, you know, living out of hotels and not eating well.
It's messy.
It's messy, yeah. And it was not sustainable. And I knew that if I carried on doing this, I'd either just, like, end up, you know, I don't know where I thought I would end up. But it was a big life decision to move to Birmingham. And it started my career in radio, and I actually think that it paid off.
Oh, big time. You're brilliant on the radio, Kate. And you know what?
I think
you exceeded so many people's expectations because of the reality TV tag, the Big Brother thing.
Yeah.
You're fabulously funny. You can keep any conversation moving. You have a magnetism about you that travels into people's ears on the airwaves. And you're a bit of a revelation. And when somebody like, you know, Chris Evans, you know, thinks the world of you, he's a bit of a don in the old broadcast world.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is, you know, but you know what? You started at the bottom of the ladder. You moved to a new city. Mm. You did the unpopular shifts. You learnt your craft. And not a lot of people do that, Kate. Mm.
Yeah. And I, like you said, it's there is that tag as well, the presumption that because you are on a reality TV show that you couldn't possibly know how to DJ, or you couldn't possibly like rock music. I remember I started at Kerrang and they were playing heavy metal, but they were actually changing their remit. So Kerrang magazine is just metal, death metal, like ska, like punk, everything rock and roll. But Kerrang Radio, when I went there, they were starting to introduce bands like Stereophonics, Oasis, Coldplay. And it was a real battle between the magazine and the radio station. So like, these aren't in line. But actually, I really liked the music, but I was introduced to bands like Foo Fighters, who I'd never even heard of. I couldn't believe it. But they become my favourite band. But I got so much abuse on text when I first joined, going, you're from Big Brother. You don't like rock music. You play. Oh, that was it, because I was DJing at the time. They were saying, well, you DJ techno and house music. You can't like rock. And I thought to myself, what a narrow-minded opinion. Like, how can you say that because somebody DJs a certain genre of music that they're not allowed to like another genre? You know, so I had to shake off that because it was like, well, because you DJ house music and techno, you don't like rock music. When I genuinely did, like, the first album I ever bought was Oasis, What's the Story, Morning Glory. I loved indie. I didn't necessarily like rock music, but, you know, I grew up with rock music. So it was kind of an education being at Kerrang Radio, but I had to shake off that tag. And also when I learned to DJ, you know, a lot of people would come to clubs expecting me to play like S Club 7 because I was in Big Brother, and they didn't realise that I was about to drop the dirtiest, disgusting, ear-bleeding, nose-bleeding techno set, and they would be terrified at what I was DJing. So it was quite hard to shake off the Big Brother. I'm not going to play all commercial house. I'm just going to go for what I believe in. But yeah, like,
it's quite nice though, isn't it, to defy people's expectations of you?
Yes,
because quite often all you can do is impress, because they're not really expecting much in the first place. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much been the story of my career, to be honest.
But isn't it great? I feel like it was such a moment that I feel really like proud to be part of, because I feel like at that time it was just the height of reality TV, where we were like, it was a national obsession. Shows like Pop Idol, shows like Big Brother, it was a national obsession, and it was the start of the reality TV era. And it was just great to be part of the beginning, like the inception of that, wasn't it? Like, I look back with such fond memories. And there was a time where I felt a bit of, shame that I was on Big Brother, but it's come kind of full circle now that it's vintage now. Whereas I think in 2005, I was a bit like, oh gosh, I was on Big Brother. I don't know why I felt embarrassed, but like, I look back now and just think, wow, what a time that was. But I think it's only now that you can look back and reflect on like what a moment we were having as like a country with the reality TV that we were putting out. Like, it was fantastic because there was nothing else like them. That's why it was exciting. Like now, I'm not having a pop at any of these shows, but when something like, you know, Starstruck comes on the telly, or like The Masked Singer, they're exciting, but like, you don't get that wow, because it's kind of like rehashed versions of shows that have already been on. There's not that, even though they're all unique in their own way, there's just not that feeling like that.
No, I mean, Big Brother was different. It really was. And you had to, also, it was a non-streaming world that we lived in, so you had to be home to watch Big Brother. So you'd leave the pub to go home.
There was
and
no
watch
social
Big
media.
Do you know what I mean?
Everything that happened, you would read about in the paper the next day, or Heat magazine, or OK magazine.
Yes.
And it was magazines, papers, no internet, really. No phone. We only had phones for like phones and texts, calls and texts. But it was, that's why it felt like such a great, nostalgic period of my life, because life was more simple back then. And you're right. It was an event. You had to be home. Yeah,
you had to be home. It became part of your day and part of your then all day conversation. Did you see it last night? But also, I think a lot of the tasks were things like, you know, just watching you organise the shopping list. There was nothing cynical about it. There was no, it wasn't done to engineer friction or tension. It was just a bunch of bored people trying to order food.
It's crazy, isn't it, what people used to watch. And it was like the time where they'd stream 24 hours a day on E4 and you could watch us sleep. And people used to come up to me after Big Brother and say, I watched you sleep for about 3 hours. And like, you weren't even doing anything, you were just asleep. But I'd still watch the live stream in case anything happened, because I was so obsessed with your series. It's mad, isn't it, that people would watch a bunch of people on telly sleeping.
But we used to do it on Pop Idol. I did the ITV2 show. And it was really rushed to air. Like, no, we'd never done a show like, there'd never been a spin-off show before, right? And then I think Pop Idol had been on air 6 weeks, and it was really big. And I get a call, and Simon Fuller, Simon Cowell, ITV, going, right, we're going to do this Pop Idol Extra. And I was like, what's it going to be? They're like, don't really know. We're just going to just wing it. So basically what it was 12 hours a week of me walking around with the film crew in the rehearsal studios or after the shows, literally just walking around going, right, we're going to go over to Mike Dixon at the piano now. He's just warming up Darius. And we just watch that for about 8 minutes, then come back to me and I go, oh, Gareth's having a coffee. Gareth, how are you today? And then we'd honestly, it was paint drying, but people watched in their millions.
Yeah, I love the extra shows. You always wanted to see what was going on. Sometimes they were better because you felt like you were just getting behind the scenes gossip that you couldn't get anywhere else. It was unbelievable. You had access to these people, but only via the telly because there was no social media. So, yeah, such good times.
Sometimes, in some ways, it was sweeter times, wasn't it?
Definitely.
The decision to go into the Big Brother house is a huge decision. The decision to quit DJing. Mm. To become a broadcaster, effectively, huge. And then most recently, you stepping back from radio. That must have been a big one as well, because you really had earned your place with that audience, Kate. And that must have been a tricky one.
It was. It was something I thought long and hard about, and I was really excited to go back to work, even though I was terrified about leaving Noah. But I went back, and I went back at exactly the same time as I just started writing the book. So there was a lot of things happening at once. I was just coming out of the postnatal depression, and then I went back to work, started writing the book, and I was trying to make everything work while also trying to do other jobs. So it wasn't, doing radio 10 years ago was my only job. Now I do so many other things. I was trying to make everything work. And I was putting my relationship with Bodge at the bottom of the priority pile and not connecting, not talking, because I would have Noah in the mornings until lunch, and then childcare would arrive and I'd go to work, and then I'd get home at 8, and then I'd have to do things like my VAT, or I'd have to do a brand post, or I'd have to edit something for Instagram, or I'd have to reply to loads of people that I hadn't spoken to. And there was just always something. And so then I'd go to bed at night and I hadn't even spoken to Bodge all day because of everything that was going on. So I tried to make the radio work with the book and with all the other jobs and with also spending time with Noah and while trying to make my relationship work with Bodge. And something had to give. And I thought long and hard about it and had conversations with Bodge. And we just agreed that we thought it was time that I took a break from radio, because it's something that I can always go back to, but it's also the thing I've done the longest. And I just thought, I've done a lot of podcasts recently and they were all before I quit radio. So you're talking to me now after my first week of having time off from Virgin, and I've had a really great week, and Bodge has noticed the difference in me. I had therapy on, I think it was Wednesday, and she said to me, Diana, she's so lovely, she said, don't worry if you don't feel different straight away. It might take a bit of time for you to readjust your new life with not doing the radio, but I can already, within a week, I know that I feel better and that I feel like I can breathe and I feel happier, and me and Bodge are better. And I've just had such a great week with Noah, and I've not had any childcare this week because Bodge's mum has been on holiday. So normally she comes 2 days a week so I can do bits and bobs. But even without childcare, I've loved every minute. And, 9 months ago, Kate, even 6 months ago, I wouldn't have been able to say this because I was in such a mess and I never thought I'd be happy again. And I never thought I would spend a day with Noah where I didn't cry. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, I feel like I've really come quite a long way. And I think the decision to leave Virgin, even though it was a big decision, it didn't feel so enormous as it might sound, because my boss, Mike, was so understanding. And the door is open. He said the door is open whenever you want to come back. So it takes the pressure off of me thinking, have I made the right decision? Because I know that I can go back when the time is right, when Noah perhaps starts school or whatever.
Do you know, all I can say is, sitting here today at 49 years of age with a 13-year-old downstairs, I did a lot of this when my son was tiny. I said no to huge shows, big opportunities. I said yes to some and really regretted them, because what I decided at the end of the day was, I've got one baby, I get to raise him once. I've made a million TV shows, I'll make more.
Yeah.
But for me, I had to listen to my gut. It made me very, very unpopular at times. And possibly cost me in my career opportunities. But those nights when I lie in bed now with anxiety and perimenopause or whatever it is that's keeping me awake at night, the things that soothe me are the memories of all the moments that I was there. Mm. And I'll never regret them, Kate. So I hope that provides some comfort.
It really does. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I mean, fair play to you as well for giving that up, because they're huge decisions you have to make, but something has to give. And you're never going to regret. Like, you're replaceable on a TV show that you say no to, totally. But you're not replaceable
and
at
they
home.
Will replace you.
Yeah.
You know, there's no, it's business at the end of the
yeah.
day.
Yeah. But you're not replaceable as a mum. Like, you're not replaceable as a mum. Like, your child needs you. And the more time you spend with your child, the better relationship you're going to have. And you know, unfortunately for some people, you know, someone commented on a post I did the other day about my first week off, and they said I'd love to be able to afford to do this, and I felt bad, and I felt bad for all the parents that can't actually afford to take that time off. It's such, man, childcare is so expensive, and for some parents, it's like they work all these hours to pay for childcare, and it's like my friend was half tempted to not go back to her job as a paediatric nurse because she said, all the hours I am working, I'm paying for childcare. I may as well not work and spend that time with my kids. Like, I don't understand what I'm doing here.
It's so hard. It is, you're right. And I sound very privileged sat here going, I turned down some big jobs and that is what I can only give my experience, which is now, you know, I'm so glad that I kept my hand in, you know. I took jobs that worked for my life rather than making my life work for my job. And I'd never done that. I was a workaholic, a complete career girl.
Yeah.
I hadn't anticipated that I would fall in love with being with him and being his mum so much. Mm-hmm. And even now, I walk down the road that leads to what was his primary school, and I can still close my eyes and feel his little hand in mine.
Oh,
his hands are bigger than mine now.
That's so sweet.
So I promise you, you know, you are investing in your heart with decisions like that, I think. It's not the same for everybody.
No,
also, what
of
I will
not.
Say is for all those, you know, on that childcare thing, you're so bloody right. I've got a lot of friends who have now got children the same age as me that didn't go back to work because the finances didn't make sense.
Yeah.
It made more sense for them to stay at home. Now they've got really low confidence. They're missing out on a huge amount of skill sets that have evolved through technology over the last 10 years, and they're finding it really hard to go back to being a working woman again. It's so, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't.
Yeah.
It's a bitch.
That's the, it's so tough when you want to be a parent, but you want to also have another job, because being a parent is a full-time gig in itself, right? So if you, you know, we can have both, but it does come at a cost. And I think, you know, people like Anna Whitehouse, who's Mother Pucker on Instagram, does so much for parents who want to work flexibly. And more companies are actually making it easier for parents to work at home, especially with the pandemic proving that you can do your job from your home while looking after a kid or whatever at the same time. But, you know, it does still come at a cost. I still had to stop Virgin because I couldn't make it work with Noah. You know, I still had to say goodbye to that income and that part of my career because I wanted, and I'm like you, I never ever thought that I would want to spend so much time with Noah. I thought that I would be wanting to go back to work and having that break in order to make me be a better mum. But I actually really do love spending time with her, especially now that she's an age where she's giving so much back and she's hilarious and she's developing her personality. But something always has to give, and I feel terribly sorry for the parents who have given up their careers, who then now feel like they've kind of, you know, that they're lacking in those qualifications or the, you know, the knowledge of what their job entails now, like 10 years down the line.
And confidence, really, you know. You know, it's even knowing things like, you know, how to use social media. If you haven't been in that working world where, like for us, socials are just, you know, it's another business channel.
Yeah.
But if you have, if you've just been on Facebook and, you know, just chatting to your mates, and then you go into a job where you're required to know about TikTok and Snapchat, for example, it's like, it's another language.
Yeah, the world's changed rapidly.
You know, when you think about the industrial revolution versus the digital revolution, it's outperforming it at a rate of knots. And we're all struggling to keep up, let alone those of us that have been working from home, raising a family. And that is still a job.
Oh, my God.
For sure.
Yeah. I was very naive in thinking that being a parent was not a full-time job. I used to mock my twin sister and say,
You horrible to your sister?
I was so mean to her. She was like,
you were such a bitch.
I'm a full-time mum on her Facebook page. And I was like, you take kids to the park. I was so out of it. I had no idea what being a parent entailed. And I was like, oh, you just sit at home and take kids to the park and you're not. But it is so full on and demanding. And there's just, especially when you are a doer and you want your house to look tidy all the time and you want to, your house to be clean, and you don't want your washing piling up. Like, Bodge always reminds me that that stuff can wait and that I shouldn't worry about it too much. But I always then remind him that a tidy home is a happy home. And I'm never happier than when my house is tidy. So I'm always tidying it, I'm always cleaning, and I'm always doing the laundry. But I think it is really important to follow your gut. So that decision that I've made, I think, I mean, it's only been a week. It might change next week, but I feel like it's paying off already because I've had a great week with Noah, and I'm spending quality time with her instead of rushing around in the mornings, getting her dressed, feeding her breakfast, getting the dogs breakfast, showering, taking them all for a walk in the park, bathing the dogs when I get home. And then by that time, it's her lunch and I'm putting her down and then I'm off to work. And I don't really spend quality time. I didn't anyway when I was on the radio, because then I'd be off to work and I wouldn't get home till 8 o'clock at night. So I feel really grateful that I've been, you know, that I can afford to make it work and to spend more time with her and actually have other avenues of income that mean I can work more flexibly around Noah as well.
Yeah. You will. You're doing it. Yeah. You're already doing it. High five yourself, sister.
I know.
Right, let's talk babies. Question number two coming up.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Maybe Baby, the podcast, you shared huge debates with Bodge about whether or not you were going to have children. Mm-hmm. And they were really difficult conversations. They don't get much deeper or more difficult than that, because he really wanted to persuade you to come to the mother side.
I know.
Which ultimately you did. But I wanted to know from you, between you, how is it, I mean, you talk about the fact that it's impacted your relationship with him and it's put the two of, I think what it can sometimes do is put you both at the bottom of the list. How has parenting and the decision to become a parent impacted you as a couple?
It's been, oh my goodness me, since we became parents, our relationship has changed so much, and I want to say for the better, but sadly, we both know, and the thing is we're acutely aware of this, that we haven't prioritised our relationship at all. And we know that we need to take steps to improve it. We're getting married in 2 months, and we've actually had like the hardest year as a couple so far. But it's not like we didn't have a baby and we didn't have this huge life change and we had a bad year. You know, we know that it's because we became parents, and your life changes monumentally when you become parents, especially when you've gone your whole life. Like, I didn't have a baby in my 20s. I waited 40 years, you know, I spent so long just being a dog mum and having the freedom, you know, financial freedom, and, you know, going on holidays where we could just go to adults only resorts, and we loved it. And, you know, just going out.
Yeah, those days are gone, babe.
Whenever, it's devastated. Whenever we wanted, and just being free and being just us with the dogs. And so it was just a huge shock, because I was confident that I would love every second of being a new mum, and that I would, because I had a really good pregnancy and I just felt really ready for it. But the reality was so far from what we see on social media. And also, I wasn't prepared for the seismic shift in our relationship and what it would do to our relationship. I thought it would change my life, me personally, but I didn't think about how much it would affect us as a couple, even though I had friends giving me advice saying, look, you're both going to say things that you don't mean when you're in those newborn days. You're both going to be more tired than you've ever been before. Try to draw a line on whatever's happened at the end of each day and start fresh the next day, because you just have to remember why you did this in the first place, right? And we always remind ourselves why we had Nora in the first place, because we love each other. And we look at her now and we're just like, how have we made this perfect little person? Like, she's incredible. And she's enriching our lives in more ways than we've ever thought possible. But we went out for a curry the other night because I pointed out that since Noah was born a year ago, we've only been out on our own on a day twice. It's not good enough. Like, but it's like finding the time to do that, Kate, especially when you start doing work.
And if you've got the time, you go, I don't want to go out tonight. I just want to go and sit in the bath. I just want to read a book. I just, you know, I actually don't want to talk to you. Yeah. You annoy me.
I can't be bothered to put on makeup and find something to wear. I want to go and sit in my pajamas and read. But yeah, exactly that. And so we'd only been out for our anniversary in June, which was March, April, May, June. 4 months after Noah was born, we went out to Galvin La Chapelle. We got all dressed up and went out on a date. We spent most of it looking in on the monitor, like, oh, is she okay? His mum was babysitting. And
it's Big Brother part two.
Oh, my goodness me. A pair of us. And I was like, let's just enjoy ourselves. But yeah, so it wasn't like, you know, we just haven't spent enough quality time together. We've had, you know, really deep and meaningful conversations about how I've put my work before him. And he pointed out very recently about, you know, the amount of work I've taken on and how I've just, you know, so the last week has been great because I've finished Virgin. And I said, honestly, when I finish Virgin, when I stop doing the radio, I swear things will be different. And so far, so good. This week has been brilliant. We've been really close. We've like both getting over COVID, so we've been a bit poorly, but we've been really in a good place where we've spoken, we've been present with each other, we're talking, we're communicating, you know, we're just better with each other. And I think that's because I have more time and I'm happier and I'm not worrying about something that I've got to do for work or worrying about something that I've got to do with Noah before I go to work. So, yeah.
It's emotional bandwidth, isn't it? You need to take all of those to-do lists and shrink them to put your family first. It's really hard, Kate. I really feel for you. And don't forget, in amongst all of this, we've been living through a pandemic in which you've had a baby.
I know.
You've just come through COVID. You've had horrible experiences of postnatal depression, which should never be underestimated. You've gone back to work. You've written a book. You'd only just finished up doing your house up. Look who's stalking, Kate. Yes, I follow you on Instagram.
I know.
But it's a lot. It's a lot, darling. You've put a lot on your very tiny shoulders, and there are always going to be cracks at the end of that. So be kind to yourself.
Thank you. That means a lot, Kate. I think, do you know what we did? It was Bodgy's suggestion that we start couples therapy, and I can't recommend it enough because it's really helped us. Mm. You know, she's given us tools that we've applied when it comes to like that feeling like when an argument is brewing and you know that you're going to go down a road which is going to lead to anger and shouting. So we're really, really working on our relationship thanks to this lovely lady called Diana. But also, the therapy, as she pointed out, that we've both gone through so much in the past. You're not just having a kid. We moved house, we renovated straight away, and as soon as that was done, we had Noah. Then obviously the postnatal hit. Bodge was setting up his own company, which is a big thing as well. Oh, you know, he's now running his own company.
Huge.
He quit his job, or he got made redundant and then set up his own company. So that was a big thing.
Oh my God, and then you've had so much going on.
And then I went back to work and wrote the book. So it's all just come to a head recently, which is why I think I ended up in hospital the other week. They thought I was having a bloody heart attack, Kate, but I wasn't. They think it's stress. I had like heart palpitations and I was 60 seconds into a dog walk and I couldn't breathe. And I rung Bodge and I was like, I feel really tight in the chest. I had a pain in my arm. And I was like, I don't know what to do. And he said, just call the GP, see what she says. And she was like, we can't get you in for a week. So I called my friend who's a nurse and she said, just go on to 111 online, filled in my symptoms. And they were like, call an ambulance now. And I felt really stupid calling an ambulance. So I didn't. And then I got home and I still had this pain in my arm. And then it started to radiate into my other arm. Because I was like, I must have a trapped nerve. But then it was both arms. Mm. And I still felt really, like, short of breath. I had heart palpitations. And I ended up calling an ambulance, but I was on the phone and I said, I don't think I need an ambulance, but it's telling me to. So I told her my symptoms and she said, we're going to send one because we just need to make sure you're not having a heart attack. So then I phoned Bodge and told him and he said, you're not having a heart attack, don't be silly. And I didn't think I was either. But when I got to the hospital, they did loads of checks and ECGs and blood tests. And they just said, they said, we don't know you. We don't know whether you're stressed or not. Only you can tell us how stressed you are. And it was the week after the book launch where I was doing a lot of press and talking about the book and reliving those dark days of postnatal depression and how I felt and things I, you know, thought about myself and Noah and my relationship. So maybe it was all of that combined. Bodge had COVID the week of the book launch and Noah was really poorly after her vaccinations that she'd had. So there was a lot going on, but I think all of the past 2 years had just come to a head and I knew that I was leaving Virgin and I was like, I just need to just breathe. And so I think it was all too much for me. And I left the hospital and they just said, look, we recommend having a 24-hour ECG just to make sure nothing's wrong with you. But we think it's probably stress-related. And I just thought, you know what, it has been a bit of a stressful period. Just too much work, not enough. Me feeling guilty that I'm not spending enough time with my daughter and feeling like I'm not spending enough time with Bodge and focusing on what's really important to me and that's my family. And so now it's like last Monday was the first day of like the new way of me living and I really feel like I've cracked it and that leaving Virgin was the right decision at the right time and I can now breathe a sigh of relief that I have a bit more time to do all these things that are important to me. Like I'm focusing on the wedding now. I'm planning the wedding. It's all about just like spending the next 2 months doing as little work as possible just to take a little breather and make sure that I'm happy on my wedding day. I don't want to feel like I've been feeling on my wedding day. I want to be a happy bride. Do you know what I mean?
It's bandwidth, Kate. Mm. You're just overstretched. Sounds like it. I just want to give you a hug because you're trying to be everything to everyone and then there's nothing left for you.
But we all do, don't we? We do. And I think that there needs to be these conversations about how much having a child can impact your relationship. And I felt really bad saying this to Bodge because I think he knew that I was going to say it. But part of the reason why I didn't want a kid was because I was so scared of what it would do to our relationship and how damaged we would be as a result of having a child and not having time for us anymore. That I feel like he knew that I, you know, when the arguments were brewing over the last year and I'd say, this is why I knew we shouldn't have had, and I hate myself for saying that because it's horrible for him to hear it, for me saying, like, I knew that it would do this to us. I knew that it would break us. I knew that we would end up like resenting each other and falling out and becoming like distant and, you know, being in like the worst place possible for a couple who are about to get married. But we're like coming out of the other side. We know what we need to do. And we're trying to like make sure that at the bottom of this, that us going into our marriage, we want to start on the right foot, which is why we just had decided therapy would be the best route for us. And we would just focus on spending more time together as a family and less time on our phones and less time working in the evenings when we're supposed to be having like that quality time together. But it does have an impact on your relationship. It can break couples. It can, you know, I've read so much online about it and it's hard because you love your children, but it does genuinely put a strain on your relationship. And anyone who says it doesn't is really lucky or they're not telling the truth.
Really lucky or they're not telling the truth. You got it in one there. Okay. Well, and do you feeling now that you've, you sound really content with your decisions, and I really hope you are, because it sounds to me like you're doing all the right things.
Yeah, I am content. I'm definitely content. I feel grateful that I've been given other work opportunities that mean I can work, like I said, more flexibly, that I don't have these committed days.
Yeah.
And so that's good. And there's a few other things that are coming up, which I'm really excited about doing. But it's the freedom of being able to work for yourself, like podcasting. Like Bodge and I are starting a new podcast soon, but we've decided to wait until June. He's like, can you just breathe for 2 months? Like, you've taken the time off Virgin, so let's just have 2 months just wait to plan it rather than throw yourself into
The world will wait.
He's like, and there's a lot to be said. Like, it's easier said than done when everyone tells you about self-care. But it's so hard because you're just constantly stretching yourself, like loads of plates spinning and making sure that everyone else is okay. You sometimes forget that your own mental health is just as important as everyone else around you.
You stop working, it all falls down, right? It's a house of cards. And same with Bodge. You know, that's why it's so important that you two are tight and that you two are aligned. Exactly. So all of this brings me really nicely to my final question, because with Maybe Baby the podcast and in and aspects of the book, you were weighing up the pros and cons of becoming parents, and you presented very strong arguments, both of you. And I wonder now, as you sit here 12 months down the line with all that you've learned and loved and experienced, which bits were you right about? Which bits were you wrong about? And which bits could you never have seen coming?
Oh, my goodness. Pros and cons of parenting. I remember doing this, of being parents. I mean, we were definitely right about tiredness. And there was one person, I held on to this, one person who said to me, trust me, you won't be that tired. You'll sleep better when the baby comes. When I was pregnant, I was saying that I was really tired. I think we were right about the tiredness. I think we were right about it being really challenging on our relationship, Roger and myself. I was wrong about, you know, not enjoying hanging out with kids. Like, I genuinely thought I wouldn't enjoy being around Noah as much. Like, I didn't think I was, you know, I promised myself I would never go to a parent and baby group. And I went to one on Wednesday and I fucking loved it. But I was wrong about that. I never thought I would dig that. But when I see how much she's enjoying herself, like, there was a bit at the end of the group where it's an independent play. They say, right, parents, you have to put all your children in a circle and they have to play independently. And I'm like, you need to step back and go away. Like, you see the really needy kids going, oh, mommy. And I'm like, oh, God, here we go. Put Noah in the circle. And she sat there at a ball pit. She was just giving out balls to everybody. And she was going, yeah, like, just giving out balls. And I was like, oh, she's so cute. But also she really enjoyed it. I mean, I never thought I would be that person. I was wrong to think that I would not enjoy, you know, doing the whole mum and baby thing. So I'm definitely wrong about that. What else did we say? I mean, I don't know if we spoke about the financial burden that children are. Bloody hell, we spent so much on Noah. We just, every time somebody says, if you tried this, we're like, get on Amazon and buy it. We'll try anything, literally.
Especially when it's teething and stuff like that. All the stuff that you just
try anything. Yeah.
Anything that's going to get you sleep, you'll throw money at, won't you?
We've got three different types of thermometer in our house. We've got, like, the gun that you point to the head. We've got the temper dot you put under the arm. We've now got an ear. Bodge went.
The one in the ear?
I just heard someone on a podcast talking about an ear thermometer. And I bought it. She's absolutely terrified. She goes mental whenever I try and put it in her ear. What a waste of money that was. So I think we were right about the financial aspect of parenting. And how,
yeah, it's a lot. It is a lot.
What I could never have seen coming, I think, is... I guess I could never have seen the postnatal depression, because even though I've experienced anxiety before I had Noah, I've always been an upbeat and outgoing and happy life and soul of the party kind of person. And I never thought that I would experience depression on that level. That hit me like a ton of bricks. I could never have seen that coming, especially seeing as I felt ready to become a mum and I enjoyed my pregnancy so much, apart from the random, like, you know, the what they call symptoms that you get when you're pregnant. But I could never have seen postnatal depression. I mean, that I never saw coming, and I...
It steals you, doesn't it? It takes you under, and it sucks all the joy out of everything that you're looking at your baby going, I should feel joy.
Yeah. Everyone says that there's a common phrase, isn't there? Like, people say, oh, you wouldn't have it any other way. You wouldn't have it any other way. It's really hard. It's the hardest thing, but it's the most enjoyable thing. You wouldn't have it any other way. And I'm like, in those first moments, I was like, yes, I would have it another way. I would basically, like, turn back time and forget that this ever happened. Obviously, I don't feel like that now, but when you're in the deep, dark depths of depression, your thoughts can't escape you. There's no, you can't help but feel those things. And now, like, you know, I feel terrible for thinking those things, but it's all part of the process. And I just think it's more harmful to not have these conversations actually about how postnatal depression can happen to anyone.
It really is.
It's 1 in 10 women. It can happen to dads as well. It can happen to carers. And it's perfectly normal to love. And I've never had a problem with bonding with Noah. I've loved her from the moment I knew I was pregnant. But, you know.
Yeah, people are confused the two, don't they, Kate? They think that if you've got postnatal depression, that you don't have a bond with your child, or you're unable to feel love for your child. Yeah. And that's not true. You might just feel horribly sad and trapped and... stifled and lost. And it doesn't always happen straight away. Sometimes it could be a year down the line. So don't think, you know, just because you're feeling a bit blue that, oh, I'm just a bit tired. We put a lot at the door of I'm exhausted, mm-hmm. I'm tired. It's hard. It is hard.
And it can happen, like you said, it can happen at any time down that line. It can happen immediately. It can happen after you've got through. You could find the first 6 months of joy. I know somebody else came to my podcast today, found the first 6 months an absolute dream, and then it hit her. Mm. And I think that's why I wrote the book, because one, I wanted to, you know, I was hoping that I wasn't the only person who felt like this. And two, I wanted to kind of make others feel seen and heard if they too were feeling like they'd gone through the same thing, or if they were struggling with the day-to-day experience of being a new parent. And
it's hard, isn't it? When you want to speak, you want to share this stuff to be helpful, right? And then, but you're doing it at a time when you're still quite fragile, you're healing. And then you go, so once you get through that experience as you have, you then have to revisit it to write about it, which kind of almost reawakens the, you know, you're waking up that sleeping tiger. Mm-hmm. And it starts to rear its head again. And then once it goes out into the wider world, I don't know, sometimes I just don't feel ready for the feedback. You know, the keyboard warriors, the Karens, you know?
That's the thing with parenting. You experience so much of online and with friends and with family of opinion giving. And people, no person has more opinions than a parent. I do it as well. My friend's pregnant. I'm like, oh, have you thought about
it? Can't help it, can you?
You do. You're like, oh, God, I'm doing that thing that I... But it's
and then you want to take them all the back. So I don't want to be that person that preaches.
No, and you're like, oh, but I wouldn't do that if I were you, actually, because actually probably we did it this way. And that's the thing. It's such a unique experience, parenting. But you have to just let people get on. I'm trying not to be that person. All my friends that are present at the minute, I'm trying not to give all the advice or say, oh, I wouldn't do it like this, I wouldn't do that, because you just have to do what works for you. And you can take on all the advice. The thing is, it's so overwhelming, the advice you're given and the opinions. Like, you'll put one thing on Instagram and everyone's like, what are you doing? Why have you not tried, why have you done that? You know that it's not advisable to do this. And I just thought, oh my goodness, why have I shared that? I'm like, it's...
I know, I felt for you. I think you had gone out one day and you'd put a muslin over your pram. And literally, an army of Karens had been on going,
she could die. The thing is, what they didn't know is that we were walking at like 9 in the morning. The sun was beaming, but it wasn't actually that hot. So we put the thing over for shade, but still, we soon realised that it's probably not the best thing to put over a pram, because you can't actually, like, it's not very breathable. But then in the same breath, like, my mum said, but no, I used to put a blanket over your pram. It was thick, and you were okay. But obviously times have changed now, and you have to look at, like, safe sleeping and guidelines of, you know, everything like that. But that,
of course.
I got absolutely rinsed for that. People, I was really...
I feel like saying, you know what? You know, like when my mum gave birth to me, they still had ashtrays built into the beds on the ward because they encouraged people to smoke through labour, Kate, right? And I'm not even 500.
What?
And I think I got brought home in the car, and we didn't have seat belts for the car seat. We don't even know how to had a car seat.
We've come a very long way, haven't we? Our babies now are so mollycoddled. Like, gee, they've got, like, there's no chance of anything happening, like... My goodness me. Yeah, hell hath no fury than the camera on the internet looking at your Instagram, waiting for you to do something wrong or that's not safe. Like, I think I said about putting Nora in her own room at 5 months, because we've got one of those monitors that come with a sock, so it reads her stats, like her vital stats, sorry. And it's got like a heart rate and her oxygen levels. And because I just think she was ready at 5 months, I thought, well, we've got the monitor and it's on my phone and it's there. So because she's got that sock on, I know her, I'm ready to do it, but I had a few Karens, like, it's at 6 months, actually. I don't think you're supposed to do that at 5 months. And I'm like, I know, it's a guideline, though, Kaz. But at the same time, social media can be really lovely, because when you need help or you have a question or you're stuck or you're thinking...
Oh, they're there, yeah.
Noah's only got two teeth. And she's 30, she's nearly 14 months. And I said the other day, she's only got two teeth. Like, is this normal? And loads of people messaged me saying, my son didn't have any teeth till he was 16 months old, so don't worry about it. Or my daughter never had any teeth till she was 18 months. So, like, yeah, it puts your mind at rest, and it helps you, you know, a lot in more ways. So you worry so much being a parent. You worry that something's wrong with your child every 5 minutes, and that this isn't right. We need to go to Amy. We need to do this. Like, the amount of times Roger and I have been like, this isn't right. This isn't right. We need to call somebody. And I ring my mate, who's a nurse, and she's like, it's fine. It's normal. We do panic. But I think it's normal for everyone.
We do.
I think it's normal.
It's your right as a parent. Mm. The book is doing so well. Congratulations, Kate. It's really honest. It's really funny. It's really engaging. All of the things that you are. And congratulations on making so many big, bold decisions. I don't think you'll ever regret them.
No, I hope I won't. I think, you know, there's been a few comments, and I know what they're trying to say from friends and from people I don't know. Like, oh, how do you feel about Noah, like, reading this book when she grows up? And I feel like it's a bit of a loaded question because, like, they're basically, like, it's obvious one that, like, they're trying to say, like, do you not think that she's going to be a little bit upset that you've written this book? And I have to remind them that, the postnatal depression isn't because of Noah. It's the way I'm feeling, like, my thoughts. If I wrote a book like, my child sucks and I hate her, then, yeah, they'd have a fair question.
Fair
but
comment.
It's like, you know, every parent has... Not every parent. I mean, some parents have it cracked from day one. No complaints whatsoever, right, about being a mum or dad. They're very lucky. But the amount of parents that I've spoken to, from friends to family members, who have, since I spoke so candidly on social media from the very newborn days and since I released the book, who have come to me and said, I felt exactly the same. And I said, with who? And they were like, oh, with my first. And I said, but you didn't tell me that. We didn't know that. Why didn't you tell any of us? Oh, because I felt bad, because nobody else felt like that. And it's wrong for parents to shy away from telling and being honest about how they're feeling if they're going through a hard time, because it's totally normal. Like, you need to normalise the feelings that you might not enjoy every aspect of parenting in those newborn days. It's okay.
And that's okay.
Like, you don't enjoy every moment with your... Sometimes your partner can be a bit of a dick and you love them, but they can be a bit of a knob.
A bit boring.
Sometimes at work, you might have a job you love, but you might work with somebody you don't like, or parts of your job, you know, I really don't like that bit of my job, this part of my job, and I just not, you know, everything in life, like, you might not like you might not like neighbours, or you might not like the part of your street you live on, and everything in life comes with its pros and cons, and, like, being a parent is wonderful, it's magical, it is. I only understand what people said about it, you know, that common phrase people say, it's the hardest thing that you'll never any other way, it's the best thing you'll ever do. I only understand it now I've done it, because I still look at Noah every single day. I can't wait to go into her room in the morning and wake her up, and she smiles at me, and she's just such a cute little person, and she's perfect to me. Like, all parents think their kids perfect, right? But I just look at her and think, I'm so glad I've done this. Like, I am exhausted. I am tired. I'm fragile still. I'm still learning the ropes, and there are days where I feel like I don't know what I'm doing. This morning, I drove her 25 minutes to Golders Green swimming rocks, only to find it was closed for half term. Because I didn't know that it was close for half term. I should know as a parent when half term is. I still don't know, Kate. I'm learning on the job. I drove
You shouldn't, because she's not at school. Listen, I've got a kid at school and I don't always know when half term is. Don't worry. Trust me.
I was like, hi, I'm here. No one's here. She's like, it's half term, Kate. It's the holidays. I was like, okay, I'll go home. Poor Noah had a 50-minute round trip in the car for no reason. And I was just like, she was so good. But it's like, there are days where you feel broken, where you feel tired, where you feel like you don't know what you're doing, where you have thoughts like, why am I doing this? But there is a reason why parents do it again and why people have multiple children, because they just absolutely love it. Like, I'm happy with one. I'm glad I've done it. I really am content just being a mum of one and two dogs. That is for me. But I honestly think it is you every day. You are going through such a complex set of emotions. You can feel the greatest joy and the deepest despair in the matter of an hour. You can have 1 hour that's good, and the next hour you feel, oh, you're like, why have I done this? But that is parenting. And the more she grows up, the more I am in love with her. And I didn't think it was possible to love her more than the previous day. And you've always got to remember, if you're going through such a shit time at the moment, one of my friends messaged me on Instagram the other day saying, do you have any... recommendations of a doula? My friend's going through a really hard time, and it hits me. Like, I feel like I've been punched in the stomach when I hear somebody else is going through it, because I've been through it, and it's so important to have help around you, whether that's family or friends. That I had her in the middle of the pandemic. I didn't have that support, which is why we hired help, because we're legally allowed to have professional help in the pandemic. But it's so important to have support from your partner or your friends or your family, because it really does take a village. And if you are in the throes of postnatal depression, or just in the thick of the early newborn days, which are so apocalyptic for you and your partner, Like, just remember that it's a phase, and you do, your feelings change as quickly as your children do. They really do. And I can speak from somebody who's gone through the worst feelings I've ever gone through, the, you know, the deepest despair that parenting can bring. But I've come out the other side, and the older Noah gets, the more I'm enjoying her. And interestingly enough, I did a poll on Instagram saying, on her first birthday, saying, have I got through the hardest part? And it was a 50-50 split. You know, half of parents were saying, you definitely have. From now on, it's like, it's plain sailing. You're going to love it. The older she gets, the more joy she's going to bring you. And for others, they said, no, the first year is actually the easiest. So it'll be interesting to see how the next year goes.
Okay, you know what? Continued success with everything. You are tremendous. I love following you on social media. I love our conversations, and I'm loving watching you fall in love with being a mum, even the tricky bits.
Thank you. Thank you.
A huge thank you to my wonderful guest, Kate Lawler. Her book is out now. Can't recommend it enough. And if you want more great conversations with guests like her, then pile into our back catalogue. It's heaving with greatness, even if I say so myself. She mentioned Anna Whitehouse in our chat there, Mother Pucker. She's in our back catalogue, as is Fern Britton, Hannah Waddingham, Emma Willis and Giovanna Fletcher, Sally Lindsay, Alan Cumming, Gary Barlow, Richard and Judy. I mean, I could go on. Thank you, as always, for lending us your ears, and to Ben Robbins and the Yahoo Studios team who produced the show with me. We'll be back next Friday with more great chat. Until then, take care.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.